Welcome to Leading Through Crisis, a conversation series exploring the idea of leadership in challenging times.
Welcome to Leading Through Crisis. I'm Celine Williams, and I'm here today with Dr. J.J. Kelly, who is amazing, and I'm really excited for this conversation for so many reasons. But Dr. Kelly has been teaching skill sets from dialectical behavioral therapy since 2004, and she is acutely aware of how teaching mindfulness skills, distress tolerance skills, emotion regulation skills, there we go, and interpersonal effectiveness skills is needed to lead during this crisis and beyond. So full bias, we were having a bit of a discussion before, so I'm extra excited about this, but I do want to say thank you so much for joining. I cannot wait to get into this with you.
I'm really excited too.
I want to start because we were talking about this, but tell me about dialectical behavioral therapy, because I think a lot of people have probably never even heard of it.
Right. Yeah. And why would they? Although sort of my dream that everybody knows what it is and how to do it too. Well, Marsha Linehan is the founder of this. She's an academic and a clinician, which almost never happens. It's like one or the other. But she took Thich Nhat Hanh's Miracle of Mindfulness for the first two mindfulness skills and the distress tolerance skills. And then the other side of it is cognitive behavioral therapy, the emotion regulation and the interpersonal effectiveness. So dialectics, like I was saying earlier, two seemingly opposing things existing at the same time. So my whole world now is a Venn diagram. And anything, you know, if you allow yourself the space to look at life in all its complexity, kind of everything is a dialectic. You know, we push things into black, white, some sort of conjured certainty, because to live in the gray causes anxiety, because it's unknown. And so what I try to help people realize is it's all gray. That's the only reality that's real. And because of our anxiety of the unknown, we push it to a pole. And we know that black and white thinking, as it's called, it spikes depression, anxiety, and all the disorders that go with that. So learn to manage your emotions, regulate your emotions, and live in the reality of the gray. So that's basically DBT. You know, Zen mindfulness meets cognitive behavior therapy.
So I acknowledged this when it was just you and I on the call, but I'm very biased towards this. I did not know about this specifically. I've heard of it, but I don't know a ton about it. So this is interesting, but I'm constantly pushing it back against people when it comes to black and white thinking. It is like sort of my default is like, nothing is like, no one is right or wrong. Nothing is, you know, like there's all shades of what is best. There's lots of shades of what we know and, you know, where we are. The thing that I sort of interpret, I'm not saying this is right by any stretch, but when people get into that place, it's a black or white thinking. It feels like it's driven from a need to be safe, to feel safe.
It's anxiety driven for sure. Yeah. But the safe thing is sort of like buzz, like the world's not safe. I don't actually safe spaces, shit like that. Like I don't think that's necessarily the most effective way to look at it. Like to require of your environment that it's safe, I don't think is that realistic. Right. I think it's more important to build a resilience and a skill set for dealing with the complexity of conflict.
Right. Well, and it's interesting because it's not, we really societally do a terrible job of doing that, of helping.
Oh, no kidding. Oh my God. Yeah. Yes. 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 But you know, there's work to be done. We are working to change that. So
yeah. I was telling JJ beforehand something that I was dealing with, even as someone who leans into living in the gray and leans into there not being a right or wrong or black or white. And I want to you know, reiterate this for our listeners, because you had some great insights, but I think it also is a way of showing some of the skills that you're talking about that we're not taught otherwise, or people don't know, we don't know what to do with them. So I was saying that I was talking to a mutual friend of ours yesterday, and she asked how I was doing. And I had said that I'm actually doing like pretty well. I feel like I'm doing quite well. And I felt like an asshole for saying that. And JJ very quickly and kindly was like, asshole, feeling like an asshole is not a feeling. So let's really name it. And we could talk about naming feelings as part of this, but I feel guilty. Like there's, despite the fact that I can recognize that there can be suffering in the world and people who are struggling right now.
Yes.
And it is okay that I am not one of those people. And my world is, I work from home already. I'm, you know, quarantined with my cats and have delicious food. And I like to cook and like, I can work out all of these things. These things can be true at the same time.
Totally. Totally.
But yes. Even for someone who can hold those, I still felt that asshole guilt.
Yes. Yes. So it's funny because I don't think I have a marker here. It's funny because that is the exact example that I use when I'm teaching the very basics of mindfulness is I feel like or that. It's usually you are an asshole.
Right.
And all those couples therapy. Okay, you are an asshole. Okay. So, God, it's so funny how many times I've written this on a board. So, I feel like or that you are an asshole.
Right.
So, the basics is if you can replace the word feel with the word think and the sentence still works, it's a thought. It's not a feeling.
That's amazing. First of all, that is amazing.
I know. A lot of people don't know this.
No, I love it.
Because we haven't taught them. Because there's this weird like, oh, I'm the doctor. I'm the shrink. Come to me and pay me for this secret information that cost $200K to learn. Fuck that. I just don't agree with that. So the tip-offs are when after the word feel, if there's a like or a that, you're on your way to a thought automatically. The word that comes after the word feel has to be an emotion word. Happy, sad, angry, guilty.
Right.
That's how that works. That's mindfulness right there, is just the separation of thoughts to feelings, because we validate all feelings, but we sure as hell don't validate all thoughts.
Right.
When we're anxious, think of all the crazy shit we've already thought generated from the anxiety of the pandemic. Like not everything we think is factual. Yikes. So if you could separate the thoughts from the feelings and you see like, oh my God, that was crazy, crazy, crazy. Whoa. And they're coming in fast and hot. Then if you can recognize that and ask yourself, what am I feeling right now that's generating the frequency, duration, intensity of all those thoughts?
Right.
Oh my gosh, I'm afraid. I'm scared right now. That automatically will regulate that emotion just a little bit, sometimes a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
So naming emotions is skill number two. This thing, and then name the emotions as much as possible. Out loud even has a stronger impact. I feel afraid. Now we're starting to regulate. And then you can make more mindful choices instead of those reactive, impulsive ones that come out of fear without the mindfulness that like end up biting us in the ass later, causing messes for later. But back to your guilt piece. So as I was saying before, I think intellectually, you probably don't see anything wrong with doing well.
No.
I consider it white privilege or privilege in general. And to acknowledge that, I think is important on a lot of levels.
Yes.
One of which is to be able to have enough distance from those thoughts to regulate the guilt. So how do we figure that out? Well, in DBT, she talks about justified and unjustified guilt. So justified guilt is when you do something that goes against your values. Well, yeah, that's justified guilt. So what do you do about it when you catch that? Well, if you're real with yourself and don't bullshit yourself, you go, oh, I feel guilty because that was shitty or a mistake or whatever. And then you go repair the transgression. You say sorry. You maybe make up for it in some way. And then you let it go. You don't sit there in like a narcissistic shame spiral. You right. let that shit go. But it's very different if it's unjustified guilt. So if you didn't do anything, like in your case, if you didn't do anything that violated your values, then by definition, your definition, your own values, not what I say.
Right.
It's unjustified guilt. And what you do for unjustified guilt is a hell of a lot more fun, which is you do the thing that causes the unjustified guilt. You do it over and over again to build your tolerance to that unjustified guilt. That is a hilarious thing to coach people through, is do the thing more. What? What? Do the thing that makes me feel some form of uncomfortable more? Why the hell would I do that?
Yeah.
Because it builds your tolerance to the thing that doesn't even make any sense to you according to your own values.
Right.
You want to make it go extinct by exposing yourself to the thing.
Right.
Just the same way people get over like fear of snakes or flying or whatever, you know, step toward it in bits to build your tolerance to it. Flooding, right. Exposure therapy, that kind of thing.
I love that. When you said that to me earlier, I'm like, oh, we're talking about that, because I think that it feels counterintuitive to do that, right? Like it feels like you'd be like, well, why would I do that thing that makes me feel a certain way that I don't want to feel?
Right. Which is almost always some form of fear.
Yes. Not surprising. But I have to say that in the world of justified guilt, which I know is not what we were talking about, but I love that in that world, there is you apologize and make reparations and yes. you let it go.
Yes.
And I think, you know, one, people tend to be good at apologizing, saying the words, I'm sorry, overall, not everyone, but I think
you think so? I'm not sure. That's much more optimistic than I am about it.
Well, to be fair, here
the
comes
words, the words, I'm sorry, ought to come out of your mouth.
Yes. So this is where my optimism stops. I think people say I'm sorry fairly often. I do not think most people consider reparations part of an apology or part of getting through the guilt at all. And I think that people really struggle with the letting go. And I think it's probably because they're not doing the reparations. But these are the two things that from my perspective, from what I've seen, those are the two things that you know, that people struggle with the most. I have a family member that we used to get in all out fights. It's not someone I have a relationship with anymore, because he would say the words, I'm sorry, and then do the exact same thing again. Yes. And then even from on the receiving end, he was totally missing the point.
Yes.
So in terms of the I love that you said all of these three things together, because it's not just one
right.
to release our own guilt.
I have like a formula that's not DBT, but that I teach for a decent apology. What I call eating your shit sandwich with dignity.
Mm.
I believe it to be character building to just do the apology, because then you don't carry shame around with you.
Right.
It's in the moment, it's quick and painful, and then it's done. You're right. Not carrying shame that is going to create anxiety just in hiding it and then do other shitty things from that is the epidemic of narcissism that we have right now.
Right. Right.
So I'm sorry. The words I'm sorry, at least implicit commitment to not do the making up for it, because we're not at even yet, right? You still yeah. did the shitty thing. You're saying sorry now just to get you into the black, you know,
yeah.
Do something extra and you find that's easy to let it go after that.
Mm.
It's much easier. Just as you said, you do the reparations and then you get to still maintain your dignity. We have been talking so much about eating shit sandwiches with dignity this week. A lot of acting out from just a place of anxiety. You know, and my people know how to, they have these skills and they're still making mistakes because we are humans. And because there's so much anxiety just collectively.
Yes.
So it's hard to keep it off you. That's another, I have these things I've made up. Like the shit sandwich thing, but then water off a duck's ass.
Right.
That's mindfulness too. Somebody projects onto you and you just, nope, that's your, that is not sticking to me. So make your mistake, say sorry, do the reparations, move on. Because otherwise it's just anxious self-centeredness. There is a point where if you don't let it go, you're just spinning in your own yuck. It's about you at that point.
Yeah, that totally makes sense.
You don't say, well, I'm sorry. And like, now the other person has to do your emotional labor when you're the one that wronged them in the first place. No, my people have learned, say thank you. Don't burden the person further. Say thanks for making that so easy.
Right.
Thanks for hearing me. Thanks for accepting my apology. Whew. Boy, do I feel calmer now. Thanks. Oftentimes that will enhance a relationship, by the way.
Yep.
But we fear it's going to make it worse, right? We fear that it's going to damage the relationship. Well, newsflash, you already did by doing the thing that you did.
Yep.
There is damage. Go repair it.
Yeah.
Let the person watch you be vulnerable and truthful and real.
Yeah.
And that enhances relationships.
Well, and to what you're saying, that you've been talking about this so much, these sorts of things so much this week, there is an opportunity inside of all of this, inside of whatever is coming up in anxiety and some crappy behavior and decisions that people are making as a result, to ultimately enhance these relationships.
Yes. With self and others.
Yes. I love that. And the reason I was smiling, full disclosure, is that I was thinking, when a lot of times when I work with leaders and we talk about giving feedback and we do examples of how to receive feedback, one of the things that whoever is receiving the feedback, and this is all like the intention is set that this is feedback for the other person to help them. It's not just you saying a thing because you have a thing that you want to say.
Yeah,
that's
totally
not what we're doing. It is like, this is to help you be your best self. The person receiving it, they say thank you to every piece of feedback that they get, whether they agree with it or not. Because there is, it's like what you're saying when you apologize and then you thank someone for making it that easy.
Yes.
It's a similar thing, right? Like, you've given me something. Thank you for making this as easy as possible.
Yes. That is the most healthy example of feedback I've ever heard. What I usually, because there's consent, right?
Yes.
Everyone has agreed that this is the exercise, because most people just come at you and be like, so can I give you some feedback? And I'm always like, no.
Yeah.
No.
Yep.
If I want to hear your opinion, I will ask. Because usually what follows is something really unbridled shitty.
Yes.
Some sort of thing that is a projection of anxiety or some sort of stuffed anger about something else.
Yes.
No, thank you. I didn't ask. But that is lovely. I mean, that word feedback, I'm so like, ugh. But that makes me, that, you know, that sounds super healthy to me.
Well, I appreciate that. But when you were speaking, I was just like, it immediately triggered that in that thought in me where it's like, oh, I love that, because I teach leaders how to do that. We talk about doing that. And it's so in line with what you're talking about, that it brings out the same thing, and it does create that and enhances the relationship. Right. Yep. And I think that right now, any opportunity we have to enhance relationships that aren't another Zoom meeting or that are, you know, another, like, but to really properly enhance relationships is just a powerful thing more than ever.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
And I want to talk about, you mentioned the water off the duck's back, and we could do this for like 4 hours. We're not going to, because I recognize that you have a life outside of this, but I do want to talk about the water off a duck's back, because I think there's a lot of people struggling with that right now, struggling with the amount of information they're getting, struggling with the amount of anxiety they're feeling from other people, not even their own, with the, if you're empathic at all or consider yourself, what you're feeling sort of collectively and globally is a lot right now. So when you say like water off a duck's back, what do you have, any exercises, anything that people can do that enables them to be that duck?
Yeah. There are a lot of skills that address that. But at the heart of DBT and all the work that we do is validation. So even naming your emotion is validation. Mm. And validation has to come before problem solving. But I think, and you know, most of these are, you know, two seemingly opposing things existing in a harmonious way at the same time. But the validation one is linear. Mm. Validation has to come before problem solving.
Okay.
Or it's a miss. So if you don't validate your emotion, you're going to keep spinning. You're going to keep believing the thoughts. Your problem solving isn't going to be as effective as if you regulated the emotion by validating it. Mm. Now, in interpersonal effectiveness, that works with the other person too. So you might validate someone else's anxiety and, not but, and recognize it's not yours and let it go. So that's one way. So you can validate someone else's. You don't have to agree with them, by the way, to validate them. Like if you think they're going crazy town on something, and I don't lie and be like, oh, I understand why you're, Jesus Christ. Like just say, I can see this is making you anxious. That's mm-hmm. a truthful statement of validation. That's real. Because even if people know when you're full of shit, you know, when there's like an like even a well-intentioned lie, it doesn't land the way you want it to because it's not real. So you say, I could see that is really making you anxious. And then you go to problem solving, always with, because but just wipes out the validation immediately.
Yeah.
I can see you're upset, but nope, done, you know? So, and is there anything I can do? Is this one of those conversations where you want to vent or do you want advice from me?
Right.
Because we don't want to give unsolicited advice. Nobody really likes that. So is this a vent or do you want me to weigh in? Maybe it's built in, the weighing in. It's still an and. I can see this is really spinning you out. And maybe turn the goddamn TV off.
Right. Right.
You know, if there's already consent that problems, they're coming to you for problem solving, if they ask, the door's wide open. Now I can say whatever, however.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's get real. There is a tipping point where you know that your TV watching of the news is self-harm. Mm-hmm. That's not you getting informed for your own safety. You know inside, according to your values, when it's starting to get ugly.
Mm-hmm.
And you just keep going because there's something about human nature that is drawn to the dark sometimes too. So we just like get in the ugly and keep watching the news. Like, stop. That in DBT is called willful behavior. The opposite of effective. Defined again by your values.
Right.
So that's one. But what I wanted to say, what's been coming up a lot is, are saying, oh, but I'm doing all this self-care. I'm gardening, I'm reading, I'm learning things online. And I'm like, well, are you validating your emotions first? Because they're like, nothing's working. I'm doing all this self-care. Well, it's not self-care unless you validate the emotions that are driving the activity. It's just activity then. It's just more do. That's self-medicating, right? I want to get away from some emotion, so I'm just going to engage in some activity.
Right.
There's a way of perverting self-harm too. Like, I'm trying to get away from the fact that I'm scared. No, I'm scared. And I'm going to do the skills that I've learned that I know regulate fear. They've worked in the past. Breathing. Three deep abdominal breaths is the start for anyone. And then from there, it varies by person. You know, maybe it's a walk. Maybe it's laughing at something. Maybe it's connecting with another human. You know, those problem-solving techniques are kind of endless and useless without the validation.
I think that's really powerful. As someone who is often in my head, I can have a very cerebral approach to things. I recognize that. And I think a lot of people can. And I think especially a lot of high-performing type people tend to take that approach first. So I'm going to speak for them, which I shouldn't, but I'm going to, and acknowledge that the validating the emotion is probably the thing that I am more apt to skip than anything else.
Oh, totally. That makes you a human being.
And as you say that, I'm like, oh yeah, it's so funny because in every other part of my life, and when I deal with people, I always say, you can't change anything until you acknowledge it, which is validation. We're talking about validating feelings. I will talk about acknowledging a situation, whatever it is, based on the work.
Yes.
But it's like, it starts with acknowledging. And I think it's so real. I mean, I love that it came up because I'm like, yeah, that is definitely the thing that I am most likely to skip at, you know, in a moment, especially if I'm under pressure or stress or feeling overwhelmed or whatever the case may be, I'm going to skip that feeling and I'm going to do the thought. I will do the thought. I will get stuck, which is then skipping the validating. And I think, I mean, I think that's there's a lot of takeaways at this point, don't get me wrong, but I think that's a really big takeaway because I think sometimes cerebrally we can come back to it later and be like, oh, well, I felt this way, so it's fine, but it's in the wrong order to your point. It has to come first for it to be effective.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that requires the vulnerability of being real with yourself.
Totally.
And I mean, that's pretty much the core of everything I teach. I think I'm going to like name the program Get Real or something with the skills of DBT, whatever, because there is calling oneself out on their own bullshit is such an advanced skill. That is when you're in alignment, where you have the ego strength to do that.
Right.
Laugh at yourself. Be like, whoa, that is some kind of, like, that was not real at all. I totally just justified avoiding, you know? And when you can do that and hopefully laugh at yourself at like, how, wow, that is so sneaky of me. You know, like, I'm very impressed by the sophistication of my bullshit, you know, like it is funny. So to laugh at it is helpful because it regulates emotion. Again, it calms the central nervous system down. So you can start to see what probably is real instead of what we're telling ourselves and then make a choice which way you want to go with it. Maybe you'd still choose the bullshit route. We do that too. And maybe you choose anything else, basically.
Yeah.
There's a psych part in what you were saying with skipping the validation. Like, we all come from a family system, and all family systems encourage certain emotions and discourage certain emotions. Yes. And that's just how families work. And so in our development, there are certain, you know, Irish, Midwestern, we're fine with anger. We do not do fear, you know?
Right.
And so I was always apt to eat sadness too. When I have a cry coming on, oh my gosh, I'll be so pissy. Like, what? I guess I got to cry. That's funny that I got pissed off when I actually needed to cry. But the fear thing, it's like, yeah, you'll skip over it and just go to the problem solving, because, you know, that's the achiever way to go.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm smart. I do that. But, you know, to go back and look at what were they cool with? You know, they don't do it on purpose. It just happens. And so we have to figure that out and like marry those two back together. Fear. I mean, Christ, I think I was 30 before I was like, oh, wow, I'm feeling fear. And then I could feel this. Christ, I had been teaching DBT for a year. I'm like, wow, this shit really works. Woo. So we're all imperfect beings.
Yeah.
We make I'm the teacher of it. I make mistakes. And then I go tell the docs, you know, the interns, my clients, I'm like, oh, you are going to love this. I did this the other day, you know, to get rid of that doctor worship bullshit.
Yeah.
I can model eating your shit sandwich with dignity for younger people. And they can now do that for even younger people. That's what it's about.
Oh, yes. I love that. And I want to acknowledge this, because I think what you're saying about family structures are designed in such a way where some feelings are okay and some feelings are not okay. And I hear from people more often than not, weirdly, this comes up a lot, where they're like, I don't even know how to name the feeling. Like, I don't even, like, it turns often into like, I'm fine. I'm not feeling anything, but it's
fine.
I'm fine. It's because they don't know how, they don't even know the words for the feelings. And as soon as you said that, I was like, I'd never made that connection, but immediately I was like, oh, I would bet my favorite saying, dollars to donuts, makes no sense, but I still love it. I would bet dollars to donuts that if they were to track back in their family dynamic, that the feelings that they're comfortable saying, like, fine, but also, you know, I feel happier, I feel excited. Yes. Those were all okay feelings to have, right? Whereas whatever it is that they don't have words for, they don't know what it is. Yes. Those are the ones that it wasn't okay.
Yes. It's weird to me, being from the Midwest and the moving to California, anger is not okay here. It's like spiritually unevolved or something. I don't think that. I think anger is an emotion that needs to be regulated like any other emotion.
Sure.
And particularly as women, anger's the emotion that tells us our boundaries are being crossed. Yeah. So there's an actual physical safety thing to that. So if we train people out of feeling anger, I think that's really dangerous. And I think it's much more effective to train people to acknowledge it and then regulate it in a healthy way. Voice it in a healthy, you can be very angry, speak to someone acknowledging your anger, and we do it in steps in a way that matches your values. And you can walk away proud and you can enhance the relationship still.
Yeah.
It's so, so important.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. And so you may not have an answer for this. I'm going to ask this question anyways. If someone who is listening or watching this is like, I think I'm one of those people that I don't know what all the emotions are. Like, I don't actually know what X, Y, or Z is, or how to name it, even to name it, right? Like, little recognize.
That's the majority of people in the world. Yes.
So is there a place you would recommend or something where they can just even have a list? Like, you know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. And I'm glad you asked the question, because I wanted to say this before.
Right.
I get so passionate, I like forget what just happened. My first class with anyone, the first assignment is to Google emotion words. I don't care where it comes from. I don't care if it's in a wheel or in lists. Like, people get all friggin' perfectionistic about it. It does not matter, because we're going to go through it anyway, because I know there are going to be some on there that are thoughts that we need to cross out. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel attacked is not a fucking feeling. Attacked makes an assumption about your intentions, which I cannot mindfully do without you confirming it.
Right.
People do that shit all the time.
Right.
I feel attacked. Well, attack's not a feeling. If you think you're being attacked, how does that make you feel?
Right.
scared, angry. Like, let's do that. But right. don't tell me what my intentions are. Because a lot of times they're loving in the challenge. And then you try to back me off by saying I'm attacking you. P.S. kind of sexist.
Yeah.
So don't pull that, you know, like, So. Bitch, please, you know, like
so much.
I've heard at all.
Yeah.
So they make the list. They come back with it and we go through it. We cross it off. I ask them why. I have them try and find the ones. Anger words, fear words, joy words, love words. And I mean, because there are ones in there that are thoughts too.
Right.
I feel validated. That's one of those that in the beginning, I'll let that one slide. But if you think someone's validating you, how does it make you feel? This is a way to go from the intellectual to the emotional. And please, if you're going to do this or anybody is going to do this, when you catch yourself doing a thought instead of a feeling, please don't shame yourself for doing that now that you know. God damn it, I did another. No, we don't judge the judgmental stuff either. You know, it's right. a mistake. You're learning. Just replace it. Find the word. No self-flagellation. Just move on. You're beginner mind. You know, you're learning something new. You're not going to be great at it right out of the gates. That's humility.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's needed. Curiosity, exploration, you know, like do a new thing. Be kind to yourself in doing so. Please. If you would not speak to someone else that way, do not speak to yourself that way. You know, the things that we say to ourselves that we know we would never say to another human, that has to be more in alignment. We cannot speak to ourselves in any way that we'd be horrified to say to another person.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird how normalized that is. That is my mission. And when I catch somebody do it, I know it's the tip of the iceberg because they're regulating in front of me because they know I'm going to go after that, which means when they're by themselves, they're berating. Now, I call that verbal cutting.
Right.
Like you might not be cutting your skin, but at least, I mean, that cutting is because my book is about cutting, but the verbal is like socially sanctioned. Mm-hmm. It's normalized. That is horrifying to me that it's allowed, even encouraged as like a false humility or a way to motivate.
Yes.
Horrifying. The absence of love towards self, you think that might be part of the problem in the world right now?
Well, and I'm gonna throw my, I'm gonna be super open about this. Someone called me out recently on how self-deprecating I am. Mm-hmm. And,
good
and
friend.
I was like, pardon me?
Good friend.
Yeah, well, No, I guess so. No, but truly, like, and I was always in my brain. So to my overthinky brain, is like, immediately was like, well, that, yeah, I mean, that's just a sense of humor. It's just my sense of humor. My dad was, my dad grew up, stiff upper lip.
Totally.
In the 20s, like self-deprecation is just, it's in my genes. That's what I do. I'm self-deprecating.
Totally.
And it is a way to help. It is a false sense of humility. It's a way that historically, I'm not saying I think, but I was like, this is how people connect and you feel approachable because you're downplaying who you are. So they can be like, oh, that's an approachable human, right? Like all of these things are layered in. And so in what you're saying, and the reason I was like, I'll throw the vulnerability hat on is that I don't think that it took that person calling me out for how self-deprecating I am to recognize that it's actually not a great thing. And I've been very mindful of it since then. Yeah. I mean, I'm way less funny now, but I've been very mindful of it.
I make fun of myself all the time and it's not eroding my self-esteem.
Well, I think that's what I wanted to touch on really quickly inside what you're saying is that I think that we have some really toxic behaviors of how we talk to ourselves that we hide as things like self-deprecating, totally. Which is a certain sense of humor. So therefore it's fine.
Totally. Totally. But you know, inside, if you like, it sounds like it was habit for you.
100%.
And like, just, you know, armor or whatever. I mean, Midwesterners, 100%. That's how we show affection, is we rip on each other. Like,
oh, hi.
And yes. I like that. I am not giving that up, but you can feel the difference. You know, my dad used to say to us, I grew up with brothers. My dad used to say to us, it's only funny if both people laugh.
Yes.
So that you can't say something horrible to someone and then be like, just kidding, and not take responsibility for it.
Mm-hmm.
That goes for self too. It seems very like, that's a great lesson. Like, good job, Dad. Thanks for that. And there's that other piece of like your relationship with yourself. I'm going to say again, particularly women.
Yeah.
That one downing, which is a skill, by the way, want to one down somebody, to step back, to allow them to come forward. That's a skill, as is bullshit, by the way. I just want people to know when they're bullshitting.
Right.
It's a skill. It's not who you are. And a lot of times, strategic social skills can get so habitual, we don't analyze them anymore, and they erode our self-esteem without us even knowing it, kind of.
Right.
But right. I make fun of myself a lot, but I do not say self-deprecating shit to myself silently or aloud. People using the word stupid, that is a very harmful word.
Mm-hmm.
I would like that eliminated.
Mm-hmm.
You could call the behavior you engaged in. If you have the ego strength to do that, that can be useful.
Mm-hmm.
If you hurt inside when you say it, then don't say it. You know, body image stuff, all this. I mean, you don't say unkind things to yourself. You can't be the person that's supposed to contribute to the world when you're constantly eroding your own self-esteem. You want to be a whole person that likes themselves so that you can contribute, make the world a better place than when before you were here.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a really important distinction to make, and I think it's important for people to be aware of that, how they're talking to themselves. And I love that idea that you can, you know, do something stupid without being stupid. I've really simplified that. I reckon, but
can't you feel the difference even when you say it as an example?
Yes. Yes. And I think that's a really, I love that. I broke it down very simply, but like that distinction of it's okay to recognize for me or another person that you have done. And it's funny because feedback, to go back to that for a second, my thing that I always tell people is you're talking about someone's behavior, not yes. who they are. You are never allowed to give feedback on who they are.
Yeah.
Only something they've done. So if you apply that to yourself as well, this is how my brain works. So I just align them up, but it's like, I have done many stupid things in my life.
Yeah.
I have learned lessons from them. Some have turned out fine. Some have not. But at no point have I ever thought I'm stupid for having done them. And that's a big difference. And I think it's important to acknowledge. And, you know, it's really interesting that to go back to the idea of this is leading through crisis. I think people are alone more right now
yes.
than they've ever been, or they're with the same small group of people.
Yes.
And stuff like this is going to be coming up more. It's like we're doing this, right?
Totally.
So
you distract from yourself, meaning your emotional experience on the regular, and that's taken away, you're just left with self. That freaks people out. That's mm-hmm. the whole thing I'm trying to do, is instead of being at war with yourself, ordinary, extraordinary, marry those two. Dark, light, marry those two. We all have both sides. Let's embrace the maybe not so awesome stuff too.
Yeah.
We're allowed to have flaws. It's cool. I swear too much. Am I working on it? No, not really. So yeah. Whatever. But I still am modeling that, loving myself, flaws and all. Mm-hmm. That's important. And more than self-love is just liking yourself so that you can be by yourself with yourself.
Yeah.
People, I mean, the vast majority of people cannot do that. But why not? Because they weren't taught. It's kind of not their fault. Yeah. Like, why isn't this shit taught in schools? Mm-hmm. In mental health, certainly.
Yeah.
Why is this a secret?
I am so on your side about this. I have gone on long rants in my life about why do we not teach children emotional intelligence from the time they are, start at 4.
Yeah.
Start with mindfulness practices. You know, I have said this multiple times. Probably will say this in many of these interviews at some point, but I was lucky in that I went to my first meditation class when I was 6 years old because my mom dragged me with her.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I have some stories I'll tell you another time. So I'm going to, but like that was, I was taken to meditation with my mom once a week, a meditation group from the time I was 6 for, you know, off and on for years.
Yeah.
So while I didn't know emotional intelligence, I had this weird, unintentional introduction to mindfulness very, very young.
Yep.
And I recognize what that has done for me years later. Whether or not I'm in regular practice of meditation doesn't matter. I can center myself and reflect in a very different way. Imagine all children had that. Imagine all children understood emotional intelligence and could name emotions in general at the age of 6. Imagine.
I do all the time.
Yeah, I'm very with you in this, in terms of the difference it would make if everyone was doing this and it was, you know, systemically part of our education system, or every organization was making sure people came in, had these skills, or every university or whatever you want to, whatever it is.
Yes.
Yep. And so we are on the same team here for sure. Yep. I really appreciate it.
And I think the field of mental health has to change.
Yep. Yes.
Yes. Like, just, I don't know. I'm trying to offer an alternative, but I think the whole thing has to go, and then something like Phoenix from the flame.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people pay a lot of money and don't get much.
So before we wrap this up, I want to talk about this for a second, because I was speaking to someone recently who said that they'd been in therapy with the same therapist weekly or every other week, don't quote me on which one it is, for 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, cool. You know, what do you feel like you're getting out of it? And I'm not opposed to therapy, by the way. Like, I think therapy is great. I think talking about stuff. Yeah. This is the thing. Like, yes. It, like, presumably you're going to get to the point, like, it comes, what are you getting out of it, basically? And they were like, you know, we talk about my childhood a lot, and it feels good to let, and I'm like, are you just telling stories about your childhood over and over again? And not,
who the hell knows? It's two people behind a closed door. It could be anything. And when you think about access to higher education, and privilege in its many forms, who becomes the doctor who's never questioned because they have that doctor title. Yeah. Plenty of people don't get better.
Yeah.
And, you know, plenty of doctors don't do the work.
Yeah.
So how the hell are they going to lead?
Yeah.
Narcissists leading narcissists? What the? How is that helping?
Yeah.
Wanting to be liked? You charge money to like get approval about how smart you are? I think that is unethical.
Yeah.
And it doesn't help people. And it sometimes causes harm, which is supposed to be the number one thing we don't do.
Right. Right. Right.
I just think, I don't think it's malicious by any means. It's just faulty from the ground up, in my opinion.
And I don't disagree with you. I think there's I am not a mental health professional, obviously. So this is an external lens on it, But I feel like right now people are so focused on normalizing mental health or taking the stigma out of the conversation around mental health.
Yeah, which is helpful. Yeah.
And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, by the way. I fully believe that this should be normal. Whatever it is okay to be neurologically diverse, whatever that looks like, right? Mm-hmm. There's no right or wrong. That's not part of it. There's no black or white. You are not mentally healthy or mentally unhealthy.
Yes.
Also not real, right?
Right. Sick. But, know all the answers. Give me a break. Right.
But as part of like taking the stigma out, I think that focus is so heavily on that it's not on, hey, systemically, are we dealing with the issues that are creating the stigma or that are, or enabling this to continue in this way?
Yes. And I think the sort of privacy / secrecy keeps it unchecked.
Yes. Yes, totally.
And I don't like that. And no. I mean, that's why I'm so expressive. Like, I'm a human being. Yes. Am I an expert on the science of human behavior? Yes. And the person in front of me is an expert on them.
Right.
We have to work together. And that means I have to actually listen.
Mm-hmm.
You know how many doctors, psychologists too, don't listen.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
There's so much ego. There's so much mental illness. Like the labeling, especially with like young people that I work with that are, you know, come to me so heavily medicated and like they're told they have all these diagnoses. Like, no.
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah.
Developmentally, you're going to put, And drugs do help some people. I'm not saying always, but the medical model. Find the problem, treat the symptom.
Yes.
You know, that's not a person in front of you. Like, what's going on at home? Like, how are you feeling? What's scaring you right now?
Like, because they're not really finding the problem. They're finding the symptom and treating the symptom. And what you just talked about is actually trying to find the source of the problem.
Yeah.
And that's not what most people are doing.
Right.
And P.S., not mental health professional, the same thing still happens in business. People focus on the symptom that they're bringing forward. That's like, this is the symptom. We need to fix the symptom, 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 symptom. Yep. And like, I'm always grateful for my coach training. And I also come from a design thinking background where I'm like, cool, we're gonna get to that, but let's find out what the source of that really is.
Yeah. And let's see what you're doing right.
Yeah.
Where are your strengths? What can we validate that's already effective in the way you deal with the world?
Totally.
There's a way I'm playing and capitalizing and enhancing strengths.
Yeah.
Perhaps that could be the focus. Here's what you're doing wrong. Here's how you're broken. Here's how I know something you don't know. Gross.
Yeah. Yep.
I don't like that. I've never liked that. I don't even like calling people patients like that. I think that's not cool.
Yeah. We could literally talk for another 2 hours.
I know.
But I want to be mindful of your time. And I know you have an 8-week online course at Dr. JJ Kelly. The link will be underneath of this. It'll be in the show notes here for people to come and see if they're a fit for a class. Whoever's watching, if you haven't already seen JJ's amazing, and I highly recommend doing anything that she puts out into this world. This woman is a force to be reckoned with. But before we wrap this up, I do just want to ask, is there anything that you would like people to take away specifically or something that you want to really emphasize? Because I feel like there's so many amazing points, but I don't know if there's one that you're like, just this above all else.
Gosh. I mean, the kindness towards self and validation are such fundamental concepts to everything I and we teach. It has to start with treating yourself with a healthy respect and just positive regard. not as a way of covering up flaws or mistakes. The kindness is in forgiving yourself for the mistakes. And the way to do that is to validate the emotion instead of attaching meaning to just a random thought that's generated by the emotion. Right. That separation of thoughts and feelings as a practice is life-changing. Yeah. Very simple concept, needs to be practiced. We can't just talk about it. I can't just teach you and then you don't do it. You listen to it and don't practice. No.
Yeah.
So validation of self, emotions, others, validation.
I love that. Thank you. Thank you for taking the time to chat with me. I adored every second of this. You're amazing.
It was really fun. Thank you.
Denise Allison, DeniseAllison.com, 7-day-challenge. So the link will be under here, and I encourage everyone to sign up. Denise is amazing at what she does. So
thank you
for taking the time to chat with me. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
I hope you have an amazing day.
You too. Stay flu free.
You too. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to us talk around leadership in challenging times. If you would like to learn more about us or any of our guests, you can find us online at www.leadingthroughcrisis.ca. If you like the show, please subscribe and leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts from.